Ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
Live from the Battleborne Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
It is the 5 o'clock hour. Alex White, Cofield. Let's bring in Miles Simmons from Pro Football Talk. Miles, what's up, buddy?
Not much. I feel like I'm being produced by Dick Wolf right now, man.
Right? Yes, yeah. Yes. You have a job. Alex has a job. I have a job. Yeah. Not to be a smart ass. Brian Daboll does not, which I feel bad about because I was really a Daboll stan, but things started to really leak oil this year with three monumental collapses. I don't necessarily agree with pulling the plug on Daboll being with Dart. Just let him finish out the season. But Daboll didn't do himself any favors.
No, he didn't. And what I thought was interesting about, you know, this whole situation is that Brian Daboll really liked Jackson Dart. I mean, you could tell how much he was into Jackson Dart being his quarterback. I mean, maybe a little bit too much so, you know, given the fact that some of Brian Daboll's play calling is why Jackson Dart is in concussion protocol right now, I think we can say. And then it's subsequently probably why he has now been fired and Mike Kafka then takes over the play calling. I guess it's kind of unfair to me for me to put that on Brian Daboll, as Mike Kafka was technically the play caller, but you know it's Brian Daboll's offense, and Brian Daboll's the one who was installing things over the course of the week and overseeing all that and then saying, hey, let's make sure that, you know, if we have to, we run Jackson Dart and da-da-da-da-da. I think that there probably is a bit more of a mandate now, even though Mike Kafka, again, was the offensive play caller and all that, that now it's like, hey, let's back off on the running our quarterback into the ground a little bit, and let's, you know, make him a little bit more of a passer, even though it's not like Malik Nabers is out there. So, yeah, it's funny that, you know, Jackson Dart is like a Brian Daboll pick, effectively, and now Brian Daboll is no longer there, and we'll see how that goes down the road. Because in a new coach, it's like, does that coach actually want that quarterback? We don't know. We don't know what direction the Giants are going to go next year, so it'll be interesting.
Well, now the elephant in the room for the Giants is Belichick and maybe Lombo and maybe Saudi money. Maybe Mara wants all of that. But I mean, this has to be a job that Belichick wants, especially considering his situation, because the Carolina thing, they've gotten better. But this is a long-haul deal. I'm sure he would like to go and, you know, kind of be plug-and-play back in the NFL with a young quarterback with a good defensive line.
I mean, look, I don't know anything, but I think that it would be a stunner if Belichick didn't want that job, right? I mean, that's probably a job he wanted a few years ago when it was open and they hired Brian Daboll, but, you know, he was still with the Patriots at that point. So, I mean, like, that to me is a no-brainer that Belichick would want that job. But do the you know, Tish and Mara want Belichick? I don't know. I mean, I think that now that things have calmed down a little bit with Bill Belichick in North Carolina, and he's shown that he actually can win a conference game or two, like that, it probably makes a little bit of a difference. It's not so loud with Belichick and Jordan Hudson and Lombardi and the Saudi money and all these different things. It could get loud in another minute. You know, you never know what Pablo Torre is going to find out. But I think at least at this point, it would be, like I said, it would be stunning if Belichick didn't want that job. I just don't know that that makes much sense for anyone in the NFL to say, yes, let's turn over everything to, you know, mid-70s Bill Belichick. Is that really that appealing? I mean, as a long-term play, when you have a young quarterback who you want to be able to train up so he'll be the guy for the next 10 to 15 years, I don't know that that makes that much sense.
What is appealing is the potential or the possibility of Jameis Winston getting the start. Are you as excited as most of the football world here?
How could you not be when this dude is in his press conference today and he's singing Hamilton? I mean, come on. Like, it's just it's just fun, you know? I mean, God love Russell Wilson, but he has not been fun to watch at quarterback since probably at least 2021. I mean, you go back to that 22 season he had with Denver, and then 23 where he was with Peyton and it obviously wasn't working, and then what he did last year with the Steelers, all of it has just been very unfun to watch. So, like, Russell Wilson's washed. At least with Jameis Winston, I mean, last year we had a game on Monday night with the Denver Broncos where he's throwing all over the freaking place. Jerry Jeudy, all these different guys. I mean, so it's like you will at least be entertained with Jameis Winston. You never know what's going to happen. He could throw three picks. He could throw five touchdowns. He might do both. We don't know. So it's at least going to be interesting to watch him go against the Green Bay Packers this week.
I got to go back on the Giants for a second, because looking at some of your stories up on Pro Football Talk, and we're talking to insider for the NFL Pro Football, Miles Simmons. One, the story about Russell Wilson, I haven't asked for a release because I want to be here. What would happen if he was released? I don't think he would be anywhere.
Oh, I mean, he would go on waivers and he would probably go unclaimed. I mean, I don't think that there's any, I mean, it's not like his contract would be that prohibitive to bring him in if there is a place that, you know, wants a veteran backup. I mean, Minnesota could potentially be a place where he might land, but like, I don't know that I really want that in my building if I'm Kevin O'Connell. I already had the the Carson Wentz experience. What do I need the Russell Wilson experience for? When we have a young QB we traded for, you know, and traded up for in the draft, I should say, and we don't know how good or bad he is, right? Like, that to me is one where it's just like, I would rather kind of not put that on our dude. I don't know. I think that it could be interesting to see him go someplace, you know, but I don't necessarily see Russell Wilson being like a very hot commodity. I mean, he could be somebody that goes somewhere, again, like I said, a veteran backup, but I don't necessarily know where that makes a lot of sense. And like, maybe Dallas, but like, does that make sense with the depth chart that they've got? I don't know. Potentially the Raiders, I guess. Would you rather have Aiden O'Connell, or would you rather have, you know, as your backup, or would you rather have Russell? I'd rather have Aiden O'Connell. So yeah, I don't know that there's much of a market for Wilson services.
Speaking of the Raiders, because you spoke of them, and I saw Florio was pretty strong on what seems to be a developing rift between Pete Carroll and Chip Kelly, and that Chip would be the guy who would go bye-bye over Pete. How are you looking at the Raiders right now? I'm kind of shocked that they're right now sitting at 2-7. Not that I thought they'd be great this year, but it's just the way it's happened. There doesn't seem to be progress. If the coaches aren't getting along, that's kind of a mess. They still haven't figured out the Bowers thing. He got 3 targets last week against Denver. It's just been bizarre.
It has been bizarre, and it's not what I expected from a Pete Carroll team. I mean, you know, look, it's not like they were terrible in Pete Carroll's last few years with Seattle. I think that there was reason to move on, as we're now seeing with Mike McDonald and the things that they're doing right now with the Seahawks. And, you know, it was right for Seattle to move off Geno Smith and go with Sam Darnold, apparently. I mean, I'm shocked by how Sam Darnold is playing. And, you know, we haven't seen him against the two teams that, you know, he struggled with last year, the Rams or the Lions, and we'll see that this week, at least one of them. But when it comes to the Raiders, I mean, I'm surprised by how bad it's been. I mean, that was one of the most uncompetitive games at the pro level I've ever seen, when they went to Kansas City and just got absolutely blasted. I mean, three first downs, it's just, it's unbelievable. It was so bad that, like, Gardner Minshew was taking knees ahead of the 2-minute warning. Like, you don't see that. And I mean, that speaks to the kind of respect, I guess, that Andy Reid has for Pete Carroll. But, like, I'm confused as to why it's not working. I think that Chip Kelly is looking like a $6 million mistake, if the reports are to be believed about his salary. And, you know, they've got a couple months to figure it out and kind of fix it and maybe build some momentum going into 2026. But, I mean, I don't know why you would bring back the coordinators at this point, right? If this is going to be a Pete Carroll team, it needs to look a lot more like a Pete Carroll team, and it hasn't. It's just been uncompetitive in a lot of different ways, and that's not something you expect, and it's not something that you can go forward with at this point.
Miles Simmons on ESPN Las Vegas. I'm going to insert a little college football here. First, I'm going to do a giveaway. 364-1100. UNLV is playing Hawaii on November 21st. That's a big game in the Mountain West Conference. Big game because the Hawaiians will show out to the tune of 6,000 plus. The Pineapple Trophy is up for grabs. Ninth Island Trophy is up for grabs. 2 tickets right now. Caller 7-364-1100, 364-1100. 2 Fridays from now, unlvtickets.com. I want to get your feel. You're not a true Los Angelino, but you've been there long enough that you have a feel. How did the UCLA going to SoFi from the Rose Bowl go over with people you saw?
You know, it's interesting because a lot of people that I know and that I talk to, and, you know, it's funny, my girlfriend is a grad student at UCLA, so shout out to her. But it's very difficult for college students in particular to get from Westwood all the way to Pasadena. Like, it's very far. I mean, it's 30 miles away. And, you know, I'm sure people in Vegas know a lot about LA traffic. Like, that is not an easy thing to do. And the real problem with UCLA is that it needs a stadium on campus. And there's no money or desire by any of the UC Regents or anybody else to really do that. I mean, that it's sort of not going to happen. And so the compromise to that, and it's not really a compromise, I guess, because you'd be breaking, you know, a lease or whatever. But if you play your games at SoFi Stadium, at least instead of going up the 405, as I sound like the Californian sketch, like you go up the 5 to the 101 and then you got to get to the 134, right? All you got to do really is go down the 405 to SoFi. It's 12 miles versus 32. And it makes a difference. And, you know, people are like, oh, you can't tell, you can't do this. Have you ever gone to the Rose Bowl? You park in a golf course. It's actually very inconvenient to get in and out of there. And there is still tailgating at SoFi parking lots. So I can understand why UCLA would want to make this change. I don't know if they're actually going to be able to get it done. There was a court ruling today that denied one of Pasadena's desires to make sure that that lease is going to be enforced, but it partially was because there's not current grounds to do that. And so we'll see how that continues to shake out. But yeah, I'm not surprised that UCLA would want to move its games from Pasadena into Inglewood. It makes a lot more sense. And it's one of the advantages really that USC has over UCLA when it comes to that, is because the Coliseum is literally across the street from campus. The only thing you got to do is cross a couple train tracks, from the Expo line that is our LA Metro system. So yeah, that it's a huge disadvantage for UCLA.
Yeah, one of the dumbest things I see repetitively is people taking a snapshot of UCLA and their practice field on campus, and they're like, they could, kind of build a stadium into this, maybe, make the practice field into a stadium. And it's like, actually, that campus has so little room that their practice field is actually only 75 yards long.
Right. Yeah.
So there's no room in Westwood on campus to build a stadium. And here's the thing. There is no easy solution. And that's the tough part of it, because I don't like either one of them. I think they both have negatives, but I would prefer they stay at the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why people think that. But like, if you look at UCLA and the history of UCLA, it's not like they've been playing there forever,
Right.
I mean, it's only been since the 80s. They used to play at the Coliseum. So, I mean, things change, and we evolve. And it's interesting. I mean, it's one of the reasons why Stan Kroenke, is quote unquote like a visionary, because he saw the Hollywood Park site and thought, hey, I can actually build a stadium here. And it's one of the few places in Los Angeles County that had the room to build a pretty majestic stadium and the surrounding development, And so that to me is why you then would try to lure something, so a program like UCLA in there, so you can continue to use it, continue to make money. And I understand it from UCLA's perspective. I certainly understand why Pasadena and the Rose Bowl want UCLA to stay. And I can understand why UCLA as a football program would want to move and get into more modern amenities.
Miles, I want to get your thoughts on a couple big games this week, week 11 in the NFL. First NFC matchup, really meaningful for the West here. Seattle going to LA, both teams 7-2. Do you give the Seahawks a shot here to go into LA and beat the Rams?
Yes, I do. I think that Seattle's defense has been just excellent, all year, and especially over the last few weeks where they've just been beating people down. And part of that is, getting the turnovers and then getting defensive scores. DeMarcus Lawrence obviously had a couple of defensive touchdowns in last week's game against the Cardinals, but also Sam Darnold is playing really, really well, right? I mean, the thing about Sam Darnold, though, is he going to revert to form in some way, shape, or fashion? I think we saw one of those really bad throws that he had against the Washington Commanders, a couple weeks ago on Sunday night. And yes, he had an outstanding game. But Sam Darnold's problem, and I've been watching him since he was at USC, is he turns the ball over. And he has these lapses where that happens. And that's part of why they didn't have the postseason success last year when they played the Rams, the Vikings, that is, of course, when he was playing there. And it's part of why he's not been as successful as a quarterback as you would think he should be, right? So we'll see if, you know, the way he's doing things with Clint Kubiak is going to be a little bit different than he was last year with Kevin O'Connell when they played the Rams. But yeah, I certainly give Seattle a decent shot to come to SoFi and win, you know, but the Rams have been playing excellent football too. Matthew Stafford, I think right now, if I had a vote, would be the MVP of the National Football League just because of how fluid the offense has been. This has been as good as Matthew Stafford has played since he's been with the Rams. And that's saying something given the fact, you know, that they won it all in 2021 when he first got there. So between Stafford, Puka Nacua, Devontae Adams, the way those three, you know, have been as a trio, the way that Sean McVay has been utilizing tight ends, a lot of three tight end sets that they've been using lately, which is not something you see in modern NFL. And the way that defense is playing, you know, guys like Jared Verse have been really, really impactful. It should be one of the games of the weekend for sure.
Yeah, excellent slate. Lions-Eagles also part of that. Wow. A.J. Brown actually on Twitch, I think it was last night, and he was joking around. He's like, if y'all got me in fantasy, trade me. Okay, A.J. What do you make of this game, though? Because offensive genius Dan Campbell taking over the play calling, that blew me away. From a guy who I think in the past during a Ben Johnson play call after the game asked about it, he was like, I wasn't paying attention. I was watching the wave in the crowd. So Big Dan is more focused now. But Lions-Eagles, what do you think?
I think Dan Campbell sometimes gets that reputation as, oh, I'm a big lug, you know, I do blah, blah, blah. But that's not who he is. Because, and I remember reading this and hearing about this from some folks with the Lions, right, over the course of the offseason. Ben Johnson leaves and they say, oh my gosh, what's going to happen with that Ben Johnson offense? It's going elsewhere. And people say, you know, it's also Dan Campbell's offense, right? Like Dan Campbell was the one who took over play calling in his first season when Anthony Lynn was the offensive coordinator and Ben Johnson was the tight ends coach and passing game coordinator. Then he got elevated to passing game coordinator and all that. And then eventually Ben Johnson becomes the offensive coordinator and he calls plays and he does such a great job that obviously he gets hired with the Chicago Bears. But Dan Campbell has done this before and it's been effective, and it's been effective with Jared Goff at quarterback. And so when you have, you know, a coach and QB who are simpatico, as those two are, it really can show you what they're capable of. So I'm interested to see how Philadelphia tries to get going, you know, against another defense. After the Packers' defense has been really good all year long. It's just that their offense is a mess, and that's why they've been losing, you know, relatively. But losing games that they probably shouldn't lose, let me put it that way. But if you look at the Eagles and their passing game, right? I mean, A.J. Brown has not been utilized like A.J. Brown should be utilized. You know, it was kind of one half against the Rams where they made that comeback and you're like, yeah, that's the way you use A.J. Brown. You get him the ball and then he does stuff with it. I mean, in that game against the Packers, you saw Devontae Smith get loose a little bit. And Devontae Smith is so, so, so good. I mean, probably the best number two receiver that there is in the National Football League. But the Eagles have to get A.J. Brown going. And, you know, When you have the winning record that the Eagles have, at some point it's kind of tough to be like, yeah, they actually do need to use one of their best offensive players. But it's not like Saquon Barkley has been running the ball as effectively as he did last year either. So there are some interesting things with the offense that I think need to be addressed. And we will see if the Lions can go in there and do what they need to do and come away with a victory, because the Lions are still a darn good team.
Miles, we appreciate it, man. Thank you, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care, everybody.
There he is. I didn't stalk his Twitter this week. I usually get him on a couple of things he's been noticing, but I did want to get every L.A. person, every L.A.-based person, I want to get their take on that UCLA Rose Bowl thing. It's a very emotional thing for a lot of people around Los Angeles, whether they're UCLA Bruins or not. A reminder, a cool place to hang out before the UNLV game this weekend. It's a Saturday 4 p.m. kickoff, Whiskey Stadium. We'll be out there live as Willie Ramirez will be on the scene as it's presented by Miller Lite and Finley Chevrolet. Whiskey tailgate party going down. That'll be from 2 until 4 o'clock. Your giveaway includes 2 VIP tickets to the Credit One Lounge over at the Al. That's before UNLV kicks off at 4 o'clock against Utah State, Whiskey Stadium.
It's Cofield and Company, live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center on ESPN Las Vegas.
We're going to talk to our college football insider, Michael Felder, in less than 10 minutes. Alex White, Steve Cofield, ESPN Las Vegas, Battleborn Injury Lawyers. Thanks for housing the show As always, Justin Watkins, Matt Hoffman, and the rest of the team here at Battleborn. Make sure you give them a call if you have troubles, you need advice, you have a case. 766-1400 is the call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. Number 4 offices around the Las Vegas Valley. It's a little ways off because it's a Monday night tilt. The crowd, that's going to be fascinating because I've heard secondary market not as robust as it normally would be because even Cowboy fans are like, well, the season's been kind of a mess. So I'm curious about the crowd for that game. But what are you going to do with that game from a betting standpoint? And what do you think of the game in general? Where are you right now on the Cowboys?
Not very high on the Cowboys at all. I don't think that they should be laying 3.5 on the road. I really don't. Their defense is just one of the worst in the league. So I think Vegas could have some success offensively.
I'm going to go off the rails here a little bit. And I know you're not the biggest fisticuffs or combat sports or boxing person. I don't know if you've bet or if Team White bets every once in a while. I would recommend a bet, but the problem here is the odds are crazy. And there's one other little problem. If this fight goes off, so it was announced today, I think it's official, that, well, we know that Jake Paul and Tank Davis were going to fight, and Tank Davis has had some legal issues. Steve Kim, our fight insider, also told us the fight was not selling well. It seemed like it wasn't going to draw. The prospects were kind of stupid. You've got a guy in Jake Paul who can fight anywhere from like 185 up to, you know, low 220 pounds, fighting a guy who is 5'4" and fights at, you know, 135, 140, probably walks around at 160. It was dumb. But now he's bitten off quite the project here in heavyweight Anthony Joshua, who is 6'5 and 250 pounds. Now, with Jake Paul fights, I've always felt like the opposition has been incentivized to fight a certain way. I'll just put it that way. I don't think they're fixed, but I don't know if there's max motivation to go out and kick booty. So for people listening, you're like, well, you're going to recommend Joshua in the fight when that's happened in the past? He's minus 900. But here's the thing with Anthony Joshua. He's made tens of millions of dollars. What sort of incentive would he get? Like, a lot of the guys Jake Paul has fought over the years just didn't make a whole lot of money in MMA. I have no idea what the deal was with Tank Davis. Maybe he's in the soup financially, but that's why I find this one fascinating. And damn it, I do it. This kid gets me every time. Jake Paul gets me every time with some kind of hook. So that fight is about 99% booked. If it does happen, I guess if, you know, the YouTube boxer who has made some progress wants to go in there and fight Biggin and Anthony Joshua, good luck, my friend. Alex, stick around. We're going to get to Michael Felder, College Football Insider here on Cofield and Company. We're live at Battleborn Injury Lawyers, and we are heading to another Josh Pastner radio show at the Orleans coming up in about 35 minutes. It's a Wednesday on ESPN Las Vegas as we're heading towards another Josh Pastner radio show live from the Orleans Casino at Bailiwick. Let's talk a little college football. Our weekly national insider is Michael Felder. You can find him up on Twitter at In the Bleachers, and make sure you sign up for his Substack. It's felder.substack.com. And this week, Mike, you've got 4 hard downs, adversity, drops are killing me, and Thanksgiving initiative. What do we got cooking? We love the Thanksgiving talk.
Turkey stock. I'm actually working on it. That was a big thing for this past week and last week. But I am going to show people what my stock looks like. Because I don't know if I'm sure you have seen it, but there's a lot of people that don't realize stock's not supposed to be like super creamy. Like once it cools down, it gets that layer of like that rendered fat on top of it.
Right.
And then I put it all in Ziploc bags, put it in the freezer. I know how many bags each piece of the recipe, in which, by the way, I also finally wrote out my recipe or my menu for Thanksgiving. And I have all my like, so when I don't know how, when you do like a meal, I'll tell you what I do. Here's what I do. I write Thanksgiving at the top. Go with the main dish, which is turkey. Then you go with collard greens. Then we go with mac and cheese. Then we go with mashed potatoes. Then we go with stuffing, all those things. Dessert course, which is where I'm trying to decide between a red velvet cake or red velvet cupcakes, which my daughter will probably eat more of. So she'll eat more of the red velvet cupcakes than she'll eat the cake. Or a cookies and cream cheesecake. Or we have homemade ice cream already. And I make these chocolate wafers with chocolate chips in them. And you can do cookies and cream ice cream on the wafers. So I'm trying to decide between one of those three.
So good. So good. I thought you were going to ask me like how I do it. And I'd be like, yeah, dude, I don't do it. So I don't use me as a reference point. You have like 27 elements to your Thanksgiving. Well, yeah. I don't know how special it is for you.
Well, yeah, that's the menu. And then off each offshoot of the menu are the things you need to make it.
Right.
And then, so you have everything you need. So the turkey, I need bourbon, I need butter, I need, you know, herbs, spices, I need all that stuff. Then I go back and I go, what do I already have? And I look through. So it's like menu item. What do I need to make it? Do I have this or not? What do I have to shop for? And I can tell you what, for anyone that's not, that's doing Thanksgiving for the first time or wants to get better at doing Thanksgiving, do everything you can to not have to step foot in the store on Tuesday and Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Yep.
Do everything you can to not step foot in that in a store. Don't do it.
Yeah, all this prep now is going to freaking pay off because then you're not stressed around the holidays. I'm jealous. I'm impressed. I'll tell you what I'm impressed with, and this is how you win national titles. Mm-hmm. You're going to have gut checks in college football.
Yes.
And last week, both Indiana and Oregon were really taken to the brink, and both came through.
I know you and I have talked about it briefly, but Indiana is a team that I absolutely love. I love the way they play defense, and their defense let them down is a really strong way to phrase with the way that they played. They gave up a couple big plays to Penn State, but the reality of it is they still play pretty good defense. But the way that the offense was like, don't worry about it, we got your back, and they went out there and they got that final score to win the game. Shout out to Omar Cooper Jr. for an amazing catch, and shout out for Fernando Mendoza for just stepping up in the pocket and delivering on that up and down ball that he was able to keep himself in bounds. And then Dante Moore, gets the ball and just keeps going and gives their kicker a chance. And all he needed was a chance, and he hit it, and it was money. Like they went out and they went and got a win. So that's what, when you talk about adversity and you got to put your feet to the fire, Dante Moore, Fernando Mendoza were able to get it done. And it's wild to see that this is how you win a national championship, right? This is how you do it. Yep. And Sappington, obviously, he was nails to get that field goal to win the game. But it was truly like, it was good. It was, we learned a lot about those teams because you expect that from Alabama, you expect it from Georgia, you expect it from Ohio State. But we hadn't seen it from Indiana and Oregon. And now we have.
So Indiana and Ohio State should be good for the Big Ten title game. Ohio State could lose to Michigan, but I still think they'll be in a good position. Indiana's got Wisconsin and at Purdue left. Oregon, though, after that performance, I feel like it's a little bit dicey to going down the stretch here. They're going to take on Minnesota this week, then USC, and then at Washington, and the Huskies just lost to Wisconsin. That's inexplicable, but the Ducks' schedule is not easy, and they're not going to have a piece of that Big Ten title game unless crazy stuff happens, so they got to win out.
Can I say something? I'm going to be candid right here. I think them not being in the Big Ten championship game might be a good thing for them.
Yeah.
You don't play an extra game against a high-quality opponent, be it Indiana or Ohio State, depending on if one of them stumbles. You don't have to play that game. You get to spend bonus time prepping. I don't know if it's the right answer, but it's one of those things where they will roll into that second week in a groove. Like, I think they'll win their first week playoff game based upon what the standings are or what the ranking, the projections are now. They'll beat anyone they play in that first round, but then you get to roll into your second round, and that's where it gets interesting.
Michael Felder's up on ESPN Las Vegas. All right, SEC eliminators, at least for the Dogs. If they lose, they're probably out of the CFP mix. Who's going to pull the upset if either one? Oklahoma +6 against Alabama, Texas on the road +5.5 against Georgia.
I don't trust Texas at all, man. Do you? Do you trust Texas? I
don't want to write them off because I think they have the talent that everyone, sure, you know, the top teams have, and obviously they played Ohio State real competitive. So I don't want to write them off, but you're right. I don't really trust them.
There's a humongous difference between trusting someone and writing them off.
Yeah.
And I do think a two-loss Georgia team can still get into the playoff.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting. And if you're the SEC, you're like, man, we could get what are we? We're, they could get five teams in, right? That's what yeah. They're like. If Texas wins, then all of a sudden, then if Texas beats Georgia, Georgia obviously would have two league losses, only two losses overall. Texas also has two losses overall. Ole Miss is sitting there with only one loss, so that's three teams plus the two teams from the SEC championship game. It looks like Sankey is trying to like engineer this, like he's trying to backdoor it to get five teams, which means somebody else is going to be left out. And that's the part that's going to be interesting to me, because we're watching this rock fight that is the ACC, and goodness gracious, like the ACC at this point really feels like a one bid team or one bid league. And so if you're a one bid league, that's really hard to say. One bid. If your league's only going to get one bid, there you go. Sometimes you got to switch it up. I think this weekend, UVA plays Duke. Duke is 5-4, but they still can get to the ACC championship game here in Charlotte. UVA was undefeated in league, and they lost this past weekend to Wake Forest, which, by the way, UNC plays Wake Forest. This is going to be a real interesting game because UNC has to win two of their last three to get to a bowl game, which is going to be real interesting. Also, you know about Belichick and the Giants and all this. So there's a lot going on.
What is Belichick and the Giants and all this? How believable is it?
I think it's pretty believable. And I had a friend who brought up the two Bills or whatever. I think that's what it's called. I don't know if it's a 30 for 30 or just And he was talking about Belichick crying in the Meadowlands. And so my buddy Tripp, who's on the show on Learfield for College Sports Now with me, he was like, he's emotional about like the Giants. And he also is like, don't you think that his girlfriend would rather live in New York City than Chapel Hill?
No doubt. And here's the bottom line. And Michael Felder's brothers, who does Tar Heel 24/7 as well, and played at North Carolina. I mean, the North Carolina job, this is hard. It's going to take a couple of years, and it doesn't mean that there's a glory at the end of the road. And the Giants situation gets him back in the comfort zone. The recruiting is done. Now he's got a young quarterback in Jackson Dart, who's interesting. He's got a great defensive line, but he's got a defense that he has to fix. I mean, everything's there for Belichick to go back. It's just up to John Mara if he wants to bring in a guy who is 70 plus and probably only has 3 years. But the Giants are so off track. They're so desperate.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing that I look at with that, and I agree, like he'll be almost, he's almost 80. Like I'd rather say almost 80 than 70 plus. But he could be a stabilizing factor. And I think it took him a long time to get these guys to act like professionals. But you let somebody handle that offense, handle Jackson Dart, you go out and you pick players that are going to work for you. And then you just focus in on trying to fix this defense for the Giants. Find ways to fix it, whether it's players through the draft, players through trades, all those things. It makes sense to me as a stopgap, as some sort of a just sort of a stabilizer, right? You stabilize it, and then we bring in somebody younger, and they don't change everything. They stick with the same program. They just have the energy to go out and do it day in, day out.
So I will tell you about the situation here in Vegas, and I'm on the UNLV beat. Dan Mullen's going to be a candidate for lots of jobs. So obviously there's talk behind the scenes, like, hey, what's key to keep him here? Does he want to jump now? What's the job of interest? We don't exactly know. But I've already got a list, you know, in my head, and I've already got a list of candidates because you always have to have a list.
Yeah.
Do you have anyone in mind for North Carolina? Is there a hot up and comer? Is there a North Carolina tie? I know you're not into Art Smith at all. Could Carolina jump in with some of these young dudes that Arkansas and Auburn, we're talking the Summerals, the Silverfields, like wherever they go.
If it's up to me, I'd throw up the world at Summerall first and foremost. I like Silverfield a lot. I like what he's been able to do.
Is there a bounce back? Listen, they have money if they're fired up to support Belichick. Why couldn't they go with retread, but there's a lot of guys who have been dumped. It's not going to be Brian Kelly, but like, why not make a run at a Jimbo Fisher?
No. I mean, I would rather see them hire Blake Harrell honestly. ECU's head coach knows the space, knows the area, which doesn't seem to matter as much anymore because so many people are going into the portal. Yeah. But they don't need this. This would be their, if they hired Jimbo, or if they went to Brian Kelly, or if they went to even Billy Napier, like that would be their, like, what would that would be their third retread in a row?
Ed Orgeron, energy.
Yeah, no. I truly, like,
you better start thinking about it. You better start putting your list together. I think Belichick to New York is going to happen.
I like Sumrall. I like him a lot. I like Summerfield. But also, it doesn't have to be a head coach. Yeah. And that's the part that we spend so much time talking about experience. Experience doesn't just mean I've been a head coach. Experience also means I know football. I've been around guys. I know how to talk in a locker room. I know how to be around players. So that's the part that really, because I'd rather hire, there are some guys that I'd rather just straight up hire that are just kind of behind the scenes. Like, that's what you, I don't know. It's very frustrating to go through all these, especially because most of the discussion is about where does Franklin end up, which it looks like it's going to be Virginia Tech. Will Brian Kelly get a job? Nobody has any clue. Billy Napier, what's he going to do? He's probably going to go somewhere and coach receivers, is my bet.
What?
Yeah.
NFL?
Maybe, but I assume college.
Wow.
That's what he got good at. That's what he was good at. And so I don't know where Billy ends up. Sam Pittman's going to go back to coaching offensive line, obviously. So everybody's got to find their own space, and it's very interesting to see how this shakes out because, again, like I said, Sumrall, Blake Harrell, from ECU, I like those guys. Silverfield, who's at what, Memphis? Like, I like that. Memphis plays ECU this weekend. I mean, that could be, those guys can go toe-to-toe if Belichick. But the other part, and this is the part that I think is going to be more interesting than the who, it's the when. Because when, if it happens with Belichick, if he does go to the Giants, right? This is all hypotheticals, folks. I don't have any inside information into this. The Giants probably aren't going to do anything until end of the year, right? What's the rush for them? They're not in a rush. So you know the dates off your top of your head on what week 18 is?
Right at the end of the calendar year. So you're looking at probably the first week of January for week 18. Why couldn't Belichick pull a Petrino and just say, you know what, or you know, I'm just out. Sorry.
Back to the
NFL.
I think he wants to make it whenever he does leave. I think he wants to make it seem like it was an opportunity he couldn't pass up. Not, right. I don't want to be here anymore. Yeah. So that's what I think. But if he leaves you high and dry, that's after the early signing period.
Yeah.
You're kind of in the midst of the craziness of the portal being thrown right at you.
You guys should hope that he does pull up stakes and just says the hell with it in about 3 weeks. It's January 4th is week 18.
I just pulled it up too.
Yeah, that ain't going to work.
So that's what I'm thinking. But guess what? The master plan might still be in action.
Yeah.
To get his kid a job.
Oh, that is, I forgot about that part, which I'm kind of ignoring because there's no way North Carolina wants to do that. Michael Felder's with us, ESPN Las Vegas. All right. I love the CFP, but because I'm not an idiot, I don't get stuck in the, like, CFP or bust. This is everything that's important in the world. A couple things came out this week. Eli Drinkwitz got on his pedestal, which annoys the crap out of me when he does this, but he's like, we need to get out of this mindset. It's CFP or bust. It's just the way it works. And not everyone is CFP or bust. Pat Narduzzi is talking reality and said, Notre Dame game this week, while it is massive on the national college football scene and massive for Notre Dame, he's like, not a must win. And he's right. He's right.
No, he's right. I don't believe him.
Yeah, you think he's going balls to the wall in the locker room and all week long in prep?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, they're not – if the game didn't matter, you would bench all your good players and then roll out your other guys, right? If the game didn't matter, you would bench your quarterback. You would bench your quarterback. You would make sure that what Des Reed got was fully healthy. You wouldn't ask him to give it a go against Notre Dame. None of that would matter. You could forfeit this game. Like if it didn't matter, if they gave up, scored 100 on you. Like if it didn't matter, like you don't have to like play in my face. Like I understand, like you are fully like you're trying to take the pressure off of your kids, and I understand that because your goal is to get to the ACC championship game. Cool, but I don't believe him for a second.
Yep. By the way, it does matter because the CFP could make the decision. Hey, and this is going to be crazy. I don't know if they would actually verbalize this, but hey, Pat, you lost to Notre Dame because you packed it in.
Yep.
You got crushed. You won the ACC title. Well, you know what? ACC, your champion, we're comparing them to James Madison, who got through the season with one loss, and we're comparing him to, let's say, South Florida.
Yeah.
And, you know, in our rankings, we don't have the ACC with one of the five highest ranking numbers.
Right.
You're out. You're not invited. And the subplot is, Pat said Notre Dame didn't matter. He bailed, so you ain't getting in.
Yeah, I mean, they could do that for sure. And it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes itself out because I truly don't – I don't know what they're going to do. And I also think I think he might try to be – lulling Marcus Freeman and hitting that team to sleep.
Yeah.
Thinking
classic Lou Holtz move on Notre Dame now.
Yeah. They're so good. They could score 100 on us. Oh my goodness. What's going to happen? But at the end of the day, they're going to have to play a football game. And I guarantee these kids are going to be out there giving their all.
Okay. I got to close in with a minute here. With this final minute, a little titillation here. One of our buddies in town, professional gambler, does his own power ratings. The numbers align. He's got the bracket in front of him for that first round. Oregon, Notre Dame, Georgia, South Florida, Ole Miss, Texas, Texas Tech, Miami. That's the bracket right now.
Ooh, wow.
The odds, if you looked ahead, Georgia would be 16.5 against South Florida. Oregon at home would be 3 against Notre Dame. Texas Tech would be 6 at home against Miami. Ole Miss, 4.5 against Texas. Any of those jump out where you're like, whoa, I like the dog, or whoa, that number's way too low. That's a blowout.
So, Ole Miss in Texas? I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Lane not playing around.
Okay.
I do. I don't think Lane is playing with anybody right now. And Georgia will take care of business, obviously. That's a pretty lopsided game. Oregon, I think that number looks a lot worse. Like, I think the number fits, but I think Oregon will find a way to stretch that one out. And Lane, again, to go back to Lane Kiffin. I bet he's probably read your buddy's stuff. Lane don't play when it comes to lines. He knows. Lane knows what's going on. And for him, I think what did you say it was? It was Ole Miss and who? Texas?
Four and a half. Yep.
Oh, Lane will eat that up.
Miami +6 at Texas Tech is very fascinating if Miami's right. And obviously, if they make the playoff, they've gotten right.
Yeah, I think Texas Tech has been ferocious. Like they've been really, and I think they'll probably be mad because Texas Tech is going to win the Big 12 and they're not going to get a first round bye. Ooh, they're going to come out there guns blazing.
Mike, you're awesome. Get back to all the Thanksgiving prep. We know you're a busy guy. We appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
All right, man. You take it easy.
Michael Felder on Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas. Today brought to you by Boomer Sportsbook. 2 locations in Southern Nevada, Ellis Island Casino and Casino Valley Verde. Boomer's built on a player-first mindset, fair pricing, and unmatched promotions like -105 all season long for pro football the rest of the way in the regular season. First deposit match up to $250 in bonus bets. There's Boomer's rewards. If you play same game parlays, there's always a bonus available. It's Boomer Sportsbook. Easy sign up, takes less than 5 minutes, and it's all digital. For more information, hit socials at Bet with Boomer. Coming up next is the Josh Pastner Radio Show. Stick around right here on ESPN 1100 and 100.9 FM.